Hare Krishna, our great fortune once again to hear His Grace Panchi Badan Prabhu on day 4, addressing to all the Bhakti Shastri devotees in Sridham Mayapur on 26th of December 2013. It's the second session. Hare Krishna.
Okay, fine. So we invite the team, Rajivindya team, to please begin. Somebody please close the door.
So, Rajavidya means king of education. And it also, we found in the purport that it is explained as an essence of all doctrines and philosophies. It is superior to temporary knowledge. That's why it's called king, because it's superior. It's complete and perfect. Without any... What's without any...
Dirt.
Without any dirt. It's explained. And how to practice? We don't preach material knowledge because we preach the essence. We follow those who know the science of the soul. We don't follow those who know other sciences. We are remaining, remain members of ISKCON.
Yes, several of the purposes of ISKCON are education based on the Bhagavad Gita.
Because ISKCON is following it, that's why we stay in ISKCON. And we put also priority to preaching to the leaders of society. When leaders become, you know, Krishna conscious, the other people follow. That's why we we give this Raja Vidya to important people as well. That's like a priority. And what are the effects? We get to realize our original constitutional position, and sort of like, because it's very important to realize ourselves. By this knowledge, we get this understanding of secondary knowledge comes automatically. So, for example, when we become more Krishna conscious, we may understand other knowledges intuitively, and like Srila Prabhupada was saying, that it's very difficult to fool a devotee because he knows what's coming from where. So that's like, and you can imagine a responsible position at work because you're aware of things. Also, we get happiness because happiness is considered to be the most valuable feeling, peacefulness, and freedom from envy. And two verses that we found in relation to this was 4.2, which is in Bhagavad Gita, Evam parampara praptam imam rajasya vidu sakarineha mahata yogonashta parantapa. And it says that supreme science was received through the chain of the cyclic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. So it was given to the saintly kings. And the chapter 22 of teachings of Queen Kunti, Srila Prabhupada mentions the shloka from Chanakya shloka, from Chanakya, by Chanakya Pandit, and it says in this shloka there is statement, vidyasa vasya bhushanam, and Srila Prabhupada explained it as, but if a person, however ugly, is a learned scholar, that is his beauty. Similarly, everything will look beautiful when Krishna is present.
Good. Hari Bol. Anybody has any questions for that?
Because ISKCON, is practicing the Raja Vidya. Therefore, our just a second. That's number two. Yeah, how we practice that this is you know how we practice that this knowledge is the king of education. We follow those who practice, basically.
I know that.
But by staying in ISKCON, because ISKCON is you know is society which is built on the principles of the Raja Vidya, then by remaining in this society, we you know we're practicing the.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in a safe position basically.
The second purpose of
ISKCON, as Srila Prabhupada states, is to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's the second. Prabhupada, when he founded ISKCON, he wrote seven purposes, and that's the second one. The first one is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I had a question. You made a point something about a devotee knowing or not, something like that, you said something?
Devotee knowing?
A devotee knows...
secondary knowledge.
Yeah, what do you mean by secondary knowledge?
Secondary knowledge means that, for example, when you become more Krishna conscious, you will understand automatically how maybe, you know, how the other processes work simultaneously. You understand the principle of Krishna consciousness, you understand what is the source, you know, and when you understand what is the source of knowledge. Because Srila Prabhupada said, it's difficult to fool a devotee, because he knows what's coming from where, what's the difference between matter and spirit, and because of that, devotee becomes more realized of himself, of the world around him, and he gets more responsible position maybe in the society, you know, and he can basically...
Okay, so he gets a better position based on his material knowledge or his spiritual knowledge?
Based on the spiritual knowledge, he gets benefit in the material society as well.
How? Suppose I have to get a government job, I better go to the college and learn some, get some degree, right? If I know Bhagavad Gita, nobody gives me a job on the basis of Bhagavad Gita.
But no, that's not a fact, actually. One of the
really?
Devotees, yeah.
Huh?
One of the devotees explained nicely this fact that if you have a good character, every employer would like such a person with a good character. Therefore, the good character is primary to knowledge. And I realized it myself in practically, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know I wasn't qualified to get my job previously.
Mm-hmm.
And by Krishna's mercy, they just gave me this job. And I learned it, in 2 weeks maybe, how to do it, how to perform it. So that thing is secondary. But primary is, you know, how you act with people, how you interact with them.
In relation to the same thing, the Prabhupada also did make a statement that a devotee knows everything, right? So what is so it's quite similar to what you're saying. So what does it mean that a devotee knows everything? Like you're also saying something similar, he has primary knowledge, secondary knowledge, he knows everything. So what does it mean he knows everything? For example, if I read the Bhagavad Gita, do I know physics? If I read the Bhagavad Gita, do I know chemistry? Do I know biology? Do I know everything if I know Bhagavad Gita? Or if I have spiritual knowledge, do I know everything?
You may not know how the chemical reactions are working, but you know the essence.
What is the essence?
Essence is pure devotional service.
Well, how do I see pure devotional service in a chemical reaction? What's the how?
We have a chemical.
I would say that. I don't know the mechanics, but you understand that everything comes from Krishna, and that this is Krishna's material energy. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, earth, wind, air, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, the false ego, all come from me. So you might not know the mechanics of it, but you understand where it's coming from, why it's there. And some scientists might know how it works, but they don't know why it works or why it's there in the first place.
So you meant to say they know the essence, or they know the source, that's what you meant to say?
Exactly. Veda, the scientists don't know, but the devotee knows the aspect where it comes from, why it's there, what you're supposed to do with it.
Okay.
The scientists might not know that.
Okay, fine. You want to add to the answer?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
In a lecture in the mid-early 70s in New York, Prabhupada explained that a devotee by reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam would know sense and nonsense when he saw it.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, fine. We thank the group. But now say, Hari Bo! Hari Bo. Okay, fine. So who's Raj Guyam? Raj Guyam. Anyway. Good.
You can do it, Christian. Okay, so our group was Rajaguya, which Prabhupada translates as the secret of all secrets. So what Prabhupada sort of elaborates in his purport, the 9-2, is the secret of all secrets is essentially two things. One is the activities of the soul, and which is by nature service, and the other activity is actually knowing the difference between the soul and the body. That's how he describes this word Rajaguya. In other words, we see through our eyes, we hear through our ears, etc., but who is the actual witness? Who is actually doing the seeing? The eyes are like an instrument, but who is actually perceiving? So by knowing that, Prabhupada explains that that's actually described as the secret of all secrets. Now I want to focus your attention to this model, just here. This is a Western model, but it's rooted actually in Vedic literature. Sometimes what happens in the West is people say, oh, I invented a particular type of model or process, but actually it's all rooted in the Vedas. In other words, if it works, it's Vedic. So here, you have four stages of training. The first stage of training is unconscious incompetence. It means that there are certain things that we don't know. You see the point? There are certain senses we don't know. So that, in Sanskrit, is a Sanskrit word for avidya. It means ignorance. And then the next stage of training is conscious incompetence. We know that we don't know something. That somebody is trying to learn Bhagavad Gita, they understand that I don't know everything about Krishna, I don't know everything about devotional service, but I'm trying to learn, I want to try to understand and try to increase my knowledge. The next stage of training is conscious competence.
What's the Sanskrit for that?
The previous one? Yeah, I've got Kanishka. But there's other Sanskrit words that you can use, but I've got Kanishka. So there's like, it's different things, it's like, I know there's something there, there's some conviction. Okay, so the next is conscious competence. I know I'm practicing and I'm trying to understand and I'm getting better and better at the science. So here are some sweet words that can be used, is Nishkam Kama Yoga. So I'm trying to clear through my analysis, I'm trying to clear through that's not that which is unworthy in my heart. And then the final stage is unconscious competence. I mean, we learn a skill so well, we don't have to think about it. And that's prem. It's spontaneous. Love is spontaneous. We're so in love with Krishna that it's just second nature. So the secret of all secrets actually takes us through these stages. From not even knowing that Bhagavad Gita exists, not even knowing that Krishna exists, sometimes not even knowing that if a God exists. And it takes us right the way through to love, pure love being second nature. Like that. Okay, so Guyam, the word Guyam is Prabhupada translates as confidential or secret, and as a search, Gleam is also used in three other places, but we'll just put two. The first is in 1868. So Prabhupada's stress in 1868 has, there's four types of people who can't actually understand the sense. Those who are not austere, devoted, engaged in devotional service, or envious. In other words, there's another reason why it's a secret called secret is because there's certain levels, according to somebody's desire, there's only a certain amount of level they can know Krishna based on their own desire. So the secret of volume in the heart understands how much a person wants to know Krishna, and then Krishna reveals accordingly. Just like if I know that somebody's envious of me, why will I tell him where my dress is? Why will I tell him who my best friends are? Why will I tell him what my mobile number is? Why will I tell him how to contact me? Why will I tell him my deepest subject secrets? Why will I tell him my girlfriend's name? Or my particular partner's name, like that. Or best friend, mother, father, etc. Family details. So it's a secret of secrets because the idea is that we can only actually fully know Krishna if we're completely pure. So it's the highest value. And then finally, Guya is used in 11.1, and the verse is, Arjuna is actually declaring to Krishna, you've kindly given me these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion is now dispelled. My illusion is now dispelled. And so, if we consider what's the most, what's valuable to people, the most valuable thing for people is pleasure. Their own pleasure, their own sense of happiness. They may seek that happiness in a mode of ignorance, but they're still looking for a certain sense of pleasure. So the highest aspect of somebody, let's say a person values most is their own pleasure and happiness. So again, the reason why I seek real seekers is because Krishna is actually delineating in the Gita how to actually be happy.
So then that's that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Haribo. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. What's this triangular
diagram
there?
I don't want to go into town too much, but the idea with this triangle is like this. You studied at Berkeley Community College, that's right?
Yeah.
So take it like this. You have somebody who learns music, one of the first instruments that most people learn to play is like a triangle, like that. And then after a while, they can divert into particularly different instruments based on their increase in amount of knowledge and awareness they have for music in itself as a science. So this triangle is like, what happens is, most people on this platform, a video said, most people on this platform and then higher platform video. So the idea is like this. As you become more qualified, you get to understand more and more the intricacies of music. You get to understand what crush it is. You get to understand different semitones, different chord scales, progressions, etc. And it becomes more and more infinite. It becomes more and more acute, like that. So the idea is that the secret of your secret is, it's not that it's a hidden treasure, the Gita, or rather, it's not that it's not publicly available, but the acute and intimate details of the Gita are more and more expressed as we become qualified. So the people who are most qualified, they get to understand the most. So that's this whole triangle concept like that. So it's just like, you have nursery, so you understand something about music, and then you move through to the PhD, and then I sort of think of the highest stage of sort of academia, so I've just got knighted. You know, if you get knighted by the Queen, that's sort of like, that's almost like considered that you've gone to the highest aspect of your
career. You become a rapper.
Huh?
You become a rapper.
Oh, that. But even amongst rappers, you may have someone who's knighted for their own work. So because they've come to the highest, the top platform of their time, you know what I'm saying?
I'm just curious how you got that chart there. How did he come up with that?
I will tell you, this is great
poetry.
We got permission from the keyholder. The idea behind the chart, you'll have to remind me, I can't remember his name, William, there's one stance that you study, basically study, it's called a four competency of training. So often, let's say, you may have someone who said, sometimes you have a stance, like Newton discovered gravity, or Pythagoras dealt with math, but it's already innovative literature. Everything whatever we come across, whatever is successful, leadership, relationship, yoga, training, learning how to learn, how to teach, whatever, it's already in the medical literature. So this person, about 20 years ago, about 40 years ago, came up with this model of different stages of training. It's already written down in the medical literature 1,000 years ago. But he's deemed as somebody who's invented it.
In accordance with this chart, this is studied in the ISKCON leadership training course. We cover this topic. So you can take ISKCON leadership training and you'll get more detail.
Even Chakra Buddha, well, good friend, Mandela's hierarchy of need, that should say some, like your Anamaya, your Anamaya, all that stuff should be on the way. Because it's based on principles dealing with your basic needs and then up to your self-actualization, which is basically synonymous with self-realization. It's really amazing.
Okay, thank you very much. Hribo! Okay, so yes, and that was the presentation, I think so. I was just going to ask that question, why it's a secret, but you have answered it. of course, as far as this various levels of competence is concerned, actually, it can be very well used in Krishna consciousness, actually, and we use it at quite a few places. One thing is leadership, and another thing is we also discuss these four stages, even in terms of giving up habits. So actually they can be applied in so many phases of our Krishna consciousness actually, because in one sense it's very logical and it can be very well applied actually. So anything and ultimately actually for the development of character, for character building, actually it follows the same stages. Initially, like if you take any quality, whether it be humility or tolerance, you take any quality, everything begins with unconscious incompetence. Where, for example, I mean, it's an interesting concept, so I just would like to speak shortly about that. Yeah, so actually if you take any quality, for example, say tolerance, initially it's unconscious incompetence, means we do not even know that I'm intolerant. Right, the person who is least humble thinks he is actually humble. Right, he doesn't even know that the one who has an anartha doesn't even know that the anartha exists. So the lowest level is unconscious incompetence. Right, and then the next level is one actually begins to understand that I am incompetent. So that's conscious incompetence. So in the initial state, that's the whole, actually if you see the whole process of Krishna consciousness very much fits into this actually. What is the difference? If you tell a materialistic person, sir, you are greedy, you are so proud, you say you're talking nonsense. I am the perfect gentleman in the universe. Because he doesn't even know that he has anarthas. For that matter, he doesn't know what an anartha is. Right, and in fact, he's harboring those anarthas as something very valuable. In the material world, what is an anartha? Actually, one thinks is a strength, isn't it? People think pride is a strength, and humility is a weakness. Right, so they're just unaware of it. So it's unconscious. They're unconscious of their incompetence. And actually, when we begin Krishna consciousness, then we I definitely had that experience, and maybe some of you can share with that. That initially we may think, it's just a matter of few days, and I think so I'll make it to the spiritual world. But as one begins to actually practice Krishna consciousness and purify oneself, the level of incompetence becomes conscious to us. Right? One actually begins to realize more and more of one's anarthas, and actually the pure devotee, in one sense, even though he has very less anarthas, he feels as if he has a lot of anarthas. So actually, that's how one becomes conscious of one's incompetence. And then, as one purifies oneself more and more by the practice of Krishna consciousness, then one becomes consciously competent. That means, okay, I have to practice humility, I have to practice tolerance. So I'm making a conscious endeavor to practice it. Right? Somebody may insult me, and I may feel like bashing his face, but I consciously try to avoid it. Right? That's conscious competence. I'm consciously trying to practice those qualities. And then as I continue to practice, one comes to a stage where it becomes one's second nature. And without a conscious effort, one automatically practices. Therefore the pure devotee doesn't have to be told, one who is totally pure in heart, doesn't have to be told that you have to be humble, you have to be tolerant. No, it is a part of his nature, that's conscious, that unconscious competence. His competence is not, he doesn't have to make a conscious endeavor to practice it, but it becomes his second nature. Therefore, unconsciously he is able to practice that. So actually these four stages very well fit into our own practice of Krishna consciousness. And it's a very good concept actually. And we can apply this at different, whether it is development of good qualities or giving up the bad qualities. In either case, we can very much apply these principles. And it's just like, an example can be given, just like learning to drive a car. So initially one comes from the stage of unconscious incompetence, and finally one comes to the stage of unconscious competence. So very well it can be applied actually in a practice of Krishna. Okay, fine. Who's the next group?
Patitram, Uttamam.
Who's that?
This is my mandate to be explain about this quality in the next chapter. Patitram Uttamam. It says like a summary of the purport. Summary of the purport. How Prabhupada explains this in the purport. He starts by saying that in the end, we saw that yesterday at the end of the seventh chapter. This is Antagatam Yesham Antagatam Papam Kamanyam Punya
Kamanyam
Kamanyam Punya Kamanyam Punya Kamanyam. Those who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives, and whose sins are completely eradicated, they qualify to enter into pure devotional service. But in this context, pure devotional service, Prabhupada says, is so pure, pavitram, not only pure, but the purest, pavitram uttamam, that it will nullify all, will take you, even though you have not ended with your previous sinful reaction, if devotional service is so pure, Patitram Uttamam, Tama means this material world, this darkness, but Ut means above, transcendental. So Uttamam basically means transcendental. And Pavitram, hence the purest, the most pure. So it will purify you from all your not only your sinful life, your actual sinful life, but all those reactions that are waiting in line, like this thought here, kunam, from all of you, Shastri, remember, like the devotion, all this thought of sinful propensity, right? And then it's beat on these seeds of sinful activities that are just waiting to come out of your mind, your body, so it will be totally eradicated, so pure. Therefore, Pavitram Uttama. And yes, transcendental to material activities. Yes. Devotional activities are spiritual and uncontaminated by the modes of material nature. So that's, in other words, this is another definition of the Pavitram Uttamam principle. That devotional, Prabhupada explains also in the purport that a devotee may seem to be acting in a material way, or externally you can say, oh, he's doing this and that, anybody does that, but his consciousness is in the Pavitram Uttamam state. You know, it's not material activity. So that's basically what Prabhupada explains in the purport about Pavitram Uttamam. And now how to purify our lives through devotional service? Of course, by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And this is the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like the very first line, Chetodarpanam Marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the heart, consciousness, Cheto. And Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. Like pure devotional service, this is the very description of pure devotional service, that is devoid of all other desires which are not desires for pleasing Krishna, engage oneself in the devotional service, and all desires for knowledge. That knowledge, that jnana referred to in this case, is the jnana that will lead us to an impersonal, Prabhupada explained actually in Nectar Devotion, that this jnana that we don't want in pure devotional service, that knowledge that will lead one to conclusion that God is impersonal and will lead to an impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth. So, what are the effects of Pavitram Uttamam? Well, it will have a beneficial effect on your own personal life. And it will, like Haridas Thakur, he said, it was asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, well, I don't know the exact quote, but anyway, he said basically that this chanting, this loud chanting will benefit all the moving and non-moving living entities, the insects, and I was thinking of something like Prabhupada said when he left New York City in May or June 67, he was going back to India after 2 years in America, and the devotees were crying and everything, and I maybe not come back, he's an old man and things like that. And Prabhupada said, I gave you the first canto of Bhagavatam and that's enough for your spiritual advancement. So he said, well, I'll be there, I'll be chanting, you'll be here, you'll be chanting, and we'll be together in this way. So that's one of the practical effects. And, what is this? Oh, creating the Vrindavan atmosphere, like we were talking in the beginning of this class. So that will be one of the effects of Pavitram Uttamam. You can create a Vrindavan atmosphere. And Shastra examples, well, the Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Shuddho Nityamukto Abhinavan Namanamino. Krishna's name is not different from the person Krishna, and one of the characteristics is that Shuddha is pure. And another quote from the Bhagavatam, Dharma Prochita Kaita Votra Paramunir Mataranam Satam. Bhagavatam rejects all material motivated religions like Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha processes. And it's meant for the pure in heart, the non-envious, nirmatsaranam satam, the Goswami, nirmatsaro pujito, like that. Thank you very much.
Haribo!
Any questions? No question? Oh, there's one.
why were you calling my name?
I will answer the question. Because that's one of the effects, that's in the category of effect. Because everybody that you see them as pure. So I will call anybody Pavitra.
Thank you. Okay, next is Pratiksha Bhagaman. You're here?
Pratiksha Bhagaman. We see in the introduction of Sri Upashan, Sri Ishopanishad, that in the introduction of it, that we receive higher knowledge by direct evidence. However, our state is such that our senses are so imperfect that only by direct evidence of practicing Krishna consciousness do we really recognize what this higher knowledge is. And we practice doing this by three methods, by preaching, by service, and by chanting, which is also where the effects come from. Chanting without offenses gives us transcendental pleasure. And in fact, chanting gives us transcendental pleasure. We've all experienced that. Of some chanting and having some pleasure coming out of it, feeling warm, feeling good about our chanting. And that can be felt very quickly, especially in chanting without offenses. In preaching, by helping the mission, by going out and doing Harinam, by doing home programs, talking to our God brothers, to helping us all understand Krishna consciousness better. In preaching, the practice of doing that comes from, this higher knowledge comes from that preaching effort. The experience that Narada Muni had, where he had the Vaishnavas and he served them all, and after he had served all the Vaishnavas, he took their remnants and he experienced this higher knowledge, this higher pleasure, almost immediately. That comes from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.25. The effects from chanting, preaching, and service is quick transcendental pleasure from chanting. Whereas if you've chanted for a long time, we all went through the class where we chanted 64 rounds. Many of us during the course of that 64 rounds reached a point where we were like chanting very easily, feeling very good about it. It wasn't difficult for a while. And we went through a phase there in chanting those 64 rounds where we felt that pleasure that was coming from chanting. In the preaching engagement and the advancement in spiritual progress, these things of chanting, preaching, and service, all of these have no requirements, no qualifications. You need no education. You need no prior qualifications whatsoever at all to attain these things. So the preaching engagement brings some spiritual progress, particularly such as our teacher knows, no one learns faster than the teacher teaching. It's how a preaching engagement works. You make spiritual progress simply by teaching. And repeating teaching, or as some of us have done before, sitting in the Krishna Fest booth for question and answers, where you get asked questions that you have no idea what the answer is, and you really have to think about how to answer these questions. You learn from that sort of engagement. Narada Muni became very pure-hearted as the sages simply by hearing and chanting. It was the process of his service that gave him this higher taste. Some of the other references we have are Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.26, where devotional service is so potent that simply by engaging in it, one becomes enlightened, and as Prabhupada says, without a doubt. So devotional service is so potent that by engaging in it, without a doubt, you will become enlightened. And also, it's quoted in the Vedanta Sutra that everything is automatically revealed to the one who simply is engaged in devotional service. So this is the summary of Pratyaksha Avagama.
Haribo!
No questions?
The question is, any question? There are two. Go ahead.
Is the word for it mean what is
it? What is the meaning of Pratyaksha Avagama? What is the meaning of it?
The word for it was by direct experience understood.
Yeah, by direct experience it's understood.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your wonderful presentation. My question is regarding the pleasure that one receives through chanting. We directly experience that. So we all know that there are three stages of chanting. There's Namaparad, chanting in defense. There's Namabhas, the stage. And there's Shunana, pure chanting. So when we refer, when you're referring to the pleasure of chanting, what stage is that pleasure available upon? What kind of pleasure is that?
The question that he has is actually, at what point do we chant purely so that we attain this higher knowledge and this transcendental information? And from my knowledge, chanting for an individual, from an individual's heart, can produce an effect of almost pure chanting at any moment, at any instant, based upon how we're feeling at that moment and what our thought process is. So while there are three different stages, these three different stages merge into each other, and a devotee can actually rise to the highest stages instantaneously and yet come back down to the lower stages based upon his particular attitude he has at that particular time. So the answer to your question is in an instant this can take place. In an instant this transcendental knowledge can be delivered, this pure pleasure can be experienced. And there can be different gradients of it, some limited pleasure, some limited knowledge, but based upon what's coming from the heart at that very moment, it can be pure transcendental knowledge.
That's correct.
Yes.
That's great.
Is that okay?
Okay, Haribo. Okay, fine, we're going to the next group. Dharmium. Okay, a little fast, please. Start.
Dharmyam, that's the next aspect. So we just put the definition from what Prabhupada translated into word to word meaning and what he gave in the purport. What exactly is dharmyam? Is the principle of religion. So in religion, we have various religious principles, and the principles are supposed to guide us, and they are the key elements. How to do that is under detail. So dharmyam refers to the principles, the path you take to reach to that goal. That is also dharmyam. Prabhupada in the purport elaborates what it is not by saying people in general would not know what actual religion is. What Prabhupada means by that is I pray to God for some material benefits, like the famous Jai Jagadish Hare will be accompanied by give me this, give me that, give me that, Jai Jagadish Hare. That motive of getting something from God and using religion and treating God as an auto supplier, that's not what Dharmyam is about. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions what is the perfection of Dharmyam. That is, doing unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how our dear Bob brought out this big point of doing this unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service, and that is the highest goal within devotional service. That's what Dharmyam is referring to. Now, how to practice? We all know, and it is given in the next purport of the next Susukam, where Prabhupada mentions devotional service consists of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam,
Sakyam, Atmanivedanam.
So that is how we practice, and the key point which Prabhupada adds is we must be doing it under the guidance of an acharya. We don't do this process just by reading it on our own. The key thing is we do it under the guidance of a bona fide acharya. So that is how we practice it. Now what are the effects is we get transcendental knowledge without going to Bhakti Shastri. So we can all close the class and go, no, sorry. The transcendental effect is without studying the Vedas, the person practicing it gets transcendental knowledge. Now, for this, Srila Prabhupada quotes the example of Narad Muni and how he didn't attend any Harvard or any other highly reputed institutes. He was just assisting his mother, who was in turn serving the great Mahatmas. As part of that service, he got the mercy of those Mahatmas, those Acharyas, and by that, he got the essence of all the knowledge. He actually did not study them. So that is the effect of practicing this devotional service. Now, Prabhupada actually quotes one of the references himself in chapter 8, the last verse, chapter 8, 28, Vedeshu Yajneshu. So the effect of performing yajna, the effect of studying Vedas is you get it by performing devotional service. We are not missing out if we are just doing devotional service. So that's the key verse which says that we get the effect of reading Vedas by doing devotional service. And the other one, Prabhupada again quotes in this purport itself, is setting the highest standard of dharma is savai pumsam paro dharma yato bhaktir. So paro dharma is the topmost. Yato bhaktir adokshaje
haitoki haituhi apratinata yayatma suprasidati. So that means by performing the dharma one should attain the unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That dharma is required, that type of dharma.
That is the paradharma. And while we were, the class was going on, I just found another quote, which is from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Prabhupada quotes it at the end of 6th chapter, I forgot the verse number. Yasya deve parabhakti, yata deve tata guru, tasya ite khatitahi atta, prakashante mahatman. Only unto those great souls, who have unflinching faith both in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Spiritual Master, all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. So, and then we have obviously the example of Narad Muni.
Thank you.
And one more point is dharma, what gives, like in the initial stages, one also gets the full freedom, because we are following the rules and regulations. We get full freedom to do activities, more activities. And the relevant shloka is the Bhagavad Gita 264. Srila Prabhupada uses a phrase called, one can control his senses through regulative principles
of freedom. Not only regular principles, but of freedom. So it is giving ultimate freedom, that is spiritual freedom.
Okay.
We are coming out of the illusion of Maya, egg of Maya. Once out, no going backwards.
Okay, thank you very much. So I think so we don't have so much time for questions. So you're safe. Okay, fine. The next group. The happy ending. The happy devotees,
Hare Krishna. Our group is called Susukam. Susukam means happiness. Not like the bad water. Why Susukam is God's name? Susukam. Sukadev. Like the Bhagavatam says, if a parrot speaks, or a parrot talks, it becomes sweeter. Because Sukadev, the story was given how the mother becomes pregnant. The parrot gets out of the womb of the mother, and he gets knowledge. That's why when he spoke about the Bhagavatam to Bhakti Maharaj, he became self-realized. And an example also, Prabhupada was giving lecture in America, in Los Angeles. And they ask him, all these boys were hippies, how do you combat them? He said, no, they are no more hippies, they are now hackies. So they are all hackies. So, everlasting means, in the beginning is happy and the end is happy. Devotional service in the beginning is happy. Though in the beginning, to follow the principles is difficult. But when you follow the principles, it's happy at the end. And when you go back to the spiritual world, people are going to become more happier. Joyfully performed. We don't the devotional service can be performed joyfully because after you have got all the knowledge, then you become purified by the knowledge. Then you become self-realized. What happens to them? What happens again? After you get all this knowledge, you are purified, you can become self-realized. That thing you become
joyful.
Become joyful.
So, how to practice devotional service? Shravanam Ketanam Vishnu. So by hearing from authorized or great acharyas, we can become happy in our lives. And by chanting the holy name of the Lord, let's chant
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
We become very happy. And we become happy also by eating the remnants of the foodstuff offered to Krishna. When you are hungry for the whole day, like now we're waiting for prasad. Everyone will be happy. But now we are not hungry, everyone will be happy. So the one that is very happy. And the most important aspect of the emotional body, you can perform the emotional body any level, either you are poor, you are rich, Krishna says Bhagavad Gita, Pushman Palam to Yamu.
It's coming.
Yeah. So Krishna says offer with love and devotion. Four things Krishna only needs. A leaf, with a pattern, or any type of leaf. A flower, it's not expensive. Ordinary water. And all these things, you don't need a lot of money. If you are a poor man or a rich man or the opera, you can offer them the ultimate life to Krishna, which I would appreciate with love and devotion. This is what we call Susukam. Then, the ultimate therapy is, Yeah, the better ingredients of the ocean service, more Krishna love.
love and devotion. No, you can't give anything to somebody you don't love. The best to somebody you love. So give all our activities to Krishna in love. Then we find in the scriptures, your performance is not devotion of service, like no difficulty. It's very simple. Anywhere, anyhow, and at any time. Time, place, and circumstance. Like in India, it's very easy to perform devotion of service because almost everybody knows Krishna. They hear about Krishna. But a place like America, you tell them about Krishna, you are crazy, are you crazy? Then in Africa, you tell them about Krishna, you say, is Krishna a black man or a white man? We saw the reference in Bhagavad Gita. We say, Yasa Tharu Deu Kutisya, Vata Tika Lakrata, Asakti Vata Tosi, Nasu Kavta Parangatu. He said, one who discusses scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own means, attain neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. That means if you bring religious principles, you act according to your own musical activities, you will not be happy. Like people are eating meat, drinking alcohol. They are not happy. Because these things bring distress to their life. But the devotees are happy. We don't drink alcohol anymore. I used to be a drunkard. But today I'm happy. So this is the power of devotional life. So Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Happy present.
So I see devotees, I see Krishna, but by seeing Krishna I'm happy.
Arriba!
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Happy ending, happy presentation. By the happy devotees. Yes, and time for prasadam. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai!
Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki?
Jai!
Samayikar Vakta Vrinda ki?